This is the I Read Comic Books podcast. This week's episode was recorded on January 17th, 2016. On this week's episode, Brian Murray, Paul Jaisley, and I, Mike Rappin, discuss comics we read recently and what books we're excited for this week. This week's episode was a bit more freeform than our normal show, but the discussion was great. We chatted about why we do or don't reread comics, and rounded off the episode talking about quote-unquote celebrity writers jumping into comics. It was a fun one. And now, this week's episode. This is the I Read Comic Books podcast. I am your host, Mike Rappin, editor-in-chief of Destroy the Cyborg. With me this week are two fantastic human beings, Brian Murray.
Hello.
And Paul Jaisley.
Hello.
How are you guys doing today? How have comic books been?
Comics are good.
Comics are great. I have a giant stack of them I'm trying to work my way through. So comic books are always there, and there's no end in sight. There's always new ones to read, so which can be a problem sometimes.
Oh, yeah. I was just saying before we started the show that I've got a whole shelf of comics. As I say, probably every third episode, I've got a whole shelf of comics that I still need to get through. But I did actually try to make a dent this week in terms of sitting down and reading a bunch of backlog digital comics that I had, as well as trying to get through some actual trades that I have. So I was reading a bunch of single issues that I like had been putting off because I bought them on like one-offs or got them on sale or got them for free through one way or another through like Comixology's like mailing list that they do. They give away a free comic every week, and so I was trying to power through some of those and see if, oh, I got this number one, maybe I'll actually like the series. And so far it's, I haven't liked a lot of them, so you know.
That's why they were free, Mike. Yeah.
I've been so caught up in video games that I haven't made it through any of my single issues for like 3 weeks now.
Oh, so Brian.
I've got like $50 worth of comic books just like hanging over my head.
Well, what have you guys been reading this past week? I know that even if you haven't been reading a lot, you've got to have at least read something.
Yeah, I did read something. I read the first volume of Giant Days.
Oh.
Which is it's a Boombox series.
Yeah.
Okay. Takes place at a university in the UK somewhere. I'm not entirely certain where. But it's a really fun, just like slice of life comic, almost.
Yeah, I've heard that. I was told to buy that book simply because it was one, fantastic, and two, a very slice of life type of story that like is a nice refresher compared to all the superhero action, you know, violent comics.
Yeah. There's nothing like super weird going on. It's the closest thing to like a real story, like a real life situation that I've gotten from comic books in a long time. And it's still a little bit wacky sometimes, just because it is a comic book. You know, you can do that.
But yeah.
I mean, it's a story about people living interesting lives.
Very cool. What about you, Paul?
Like I said, I've got a giant stack of stuff I'm trying to work my way through. Paper Girls number 4 was one I just read, but literally before we hit record here today. Really dug it. That book is still not what I expected at all, but I love it because of that. Transformers versus G.I. Joe number 10. Obviously, I love this book. I've said enough about it. I thought issue 9 was fantastic. This issue got back to the main story. Still, month to month, my favorite comic book out there. Fade Out number 12, I thought was a perfect ending to the story. It was kind of like a downer ending, but I thought it fit really well. And that's something I'm very excited to go back and reread start to finish soon, hopefully. And then Daredevil number 2, this is the new, all different Daredevil, right? By Charles Soule, art by Ron Garney. And it's not all that new and it's not all that different. I'm not digging it. You know, the thing is, it's like, I know there's people that when they read Daredevil comics, they want ninjas. I'm not one of those people. So as soon as this issue...
I'm one of those people. Damn it, Paul.
It's fine, Mike. This is for you. I have the Mark Waid Daredevil for me. You have this Daredevil for you. We can all be happy.
Okay.
Yeah, that's kind of... I think that I'm done with that series. But the biggest thing I finished this week or the past couple weeks is I finally finished reading all of Preacher, the Garth Ennis and Steve Dillon classic from the 90s. I used my vacation time from work over the holidays to just plow through a big chunk of it. And I ended up liking it a lot more than I expected to. I wasn't really into the main plot or main story of it, but about halfway through the series, it twists and becomes more about the relationships of the main characters than it does the overall story. And I really think Garth Ennis is really underrated at his ability to write strong characters and relationships. So I ended up really liking it, although at the end, I'm like reading it, and I think there's no reason to make this a TV show. You know, it's a perfectly fine comic. There's nothing in here that's going to be better as a TV show. So that's one of the main reasons I wanted to read it, is to build up for the upcoming TV show. But afterward, reading it, I think, what's the point? Let the comic stand on its own, because it's good on as its own thing. Doesn't need to be adapted in my book.
Cough, cough, gotcha. Walking Dead, cough, cough.
Well.
Yeah, well, I made it through about 50 issues of the comic and realized that's all that was going to be. So I gave up on that too. So.
I mean, that's a pretty good sample size, I think, of the series so far. I mean, at this point you've read a third of the series, and I can say probably the gist of it. I mean, fucking zombies, right? Like, that's the whole show.
Exactly.
So, well, for me, I read quite a bit. As I said, I've been trying to catch up through some of my backlog, but the one thing I did read that I'm really excited about was Secret Wars number 9, and, you know, despite all the hate and whatever, as I've said every single time an issue of this book has come out, number 9 was the perfect ending. I really enjoyed it. I've talked to a couple different people that I work with that had read it, and they said that they really enjoyed the ending too, and it was really fitting, given the entire length of Hickman's like run with the Fantastic Four and everything that he's been building for the past like 3 years. It was actually a very solid ending. So I was very happy with it. Even having just read the Secret Wars stuff, and I haven't read all of his Fantastic Four and all that other jazz, but I did read, you know, having just read Secret Wars, it was a very, very well done event book. So there's that. I've been reading through Justice, which is an old DC book, which is all about what if all the supervillains in the DC universe teamed up to take down all of the heroes because of some calamitous event that they all dreamed together would happen. And I don't really want to say much more than that, because it's a really cool, really beautiful book. Despite what you may think about Alex Ross's, I really like it. I read the first two issues of Mind MGMT, or Mind Management Volume 3. That's a book that is so dense that really you have to put it down every two issues or you might go crazy. I highly recommend that book, but it is dense as fuck. I can't think of another book that is so dense with information. It's very good. And I also read All New Wolverine number 4. I love that book. I love that book. I love that book. Everyone, X-23 is the best X-Men character ever. She's not necessarily my favorite, because I still have a heart and I need to love Gambit until the end of time. But X-23, she's up there. She might break into my top 3, I think, at this point. But finally, the big issue that I read that I want to talk a little bit more about was Extraordinary X-Men number 5, the series that everyone loves to hate. And I kind of get it now after number 5. That being said, issue number 5 was very strange. I don't know what Jeff Lemire's goal is with this book. And it really bums me out, because I have read I read work from him that is so good. Like Sweet Tooth made me cry. You know, his work on Animal Man was unbelievably good. And I'm really bummed that this team book is just not working out for him, or it seems like it's not working out. They keep hinting at this whole big awful thing that Cyclops did, and they keep saying, like, the thing that Cyclops did, even in the other X-Men books. Like, I also read All New X-Men number 1, or number 3 this week, and they were just like, remember that thing that Cyclops did? And everybody nods, and no one explains it at all. Like, they're beating around the bush in such an awful way. It makes me want to throw up. And Extraordinary X-Men number 5 was like at the end of an arc, kind of. Mr. Sinister showed up at one point. There was this whole thing with clones and classic X-Men stuff. And I'm just like, this feels so thrown together. Like, it wasn't planned. It just, pieces of X-Men, they're just trying to put together in a story. And I don't know. Humberto Ramos's art has been okay. I'm really sick of Wolverine, and it's not even actually Wolverine. It's Old Man Logan. this book is like rubbing me the wrong way, but I'm going to see it through because that's just the fucking problem I have in my head.
That's just what you are.
Yeah. Like, I'm the type of person that just keeps smoking cigarettes even though I've got cancer of the lung. Like, whatever, man, this is going to happen. So, well,
that's a bad example because at that point, what the fuck? Well, why not?
Yeah, right. Right. Yeah. I mean, it's I'm in so deep. It's there's no way I'm getting out. No, and it's not even that. I have hope for bad X-Men stories because I have read what a lot of people have called bad X-Men stories and really enjoyed, and their reasoning for not liking those books was really shallow. So I don't want to say this book is awful because Wolverine is annoying, and that's not. That's not what makes, I don't know, to me, that's not what makes a bad comic book. A bad comic book is a poorly written story. And at this point, that's kind of how this book is, but I'm pushing through. Like, maybe they just needed to establish a bunch of bullshit before they actually get into the good story.
You're like the Detroit Lions fan of the comic book world. We're like, yes. It's not good, it hasn't been good for a while, but you're still going to keep buying tickets because you remember when it was so good.
That's actually very accurate. Yes.
Great.
So, yeah, that's what I read this week. I read a bunch of other stuff, but those were like the top five for me. But speaking of other books, as we do every week, what are your comic picks for this week, guys? What are you really excited for?
I'm kind of in an awkward position. I haven't read any of my single issues for so long that I'm not super excited about anything because I have to read at least one back issue before I can read whatever's coming out this week. Right. But the one thing that I am looking forward to is wrapping up Arkham Knight Genesis.
What book is that? I don't actually am not familiar with that at all.
It's I don't know either. If it's officially like a tie-in with the Arkham Knight video game or not.
Oh,
but it's
okay.
All about where this character of the Arkham Knight comes from, who he is, why he is the way he is.
Batman,
why he hates Batman so much.
Oh, wait. Okay. There's a different person who is the Arkham Knight that isn't Batman?
Yeah, he's Red Hood, is what he is. Like,
oh, okay.
They're not calling him Red Hood, but he's Red Hood.
Okay,
He's a former Robin who, due to the Joker's actions, becomes a villain who hates Batman and shoots people. Like,
oh,
he's fucking Red Hood, but...
Right. So, how has this series been so far? Are you, like, a couple months behind, or have you read any of the series?
Yeah, I think I've read the first four issues. I think I have the one coming out next week, or this week, and then the one that I haven't read yet.
Gotcha.
But it's been good. I mean, I'm able to divorce myself from the Red Hood issue pretty well, just because I haven't been a big DC reader for my life.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it's an interesting psychological story of how a person can be broken down and reshaped, even though it makes, like, you know, you can look at it and you can say there's no way that would ever happen, that doesn't make any sense, but it's done really well, I think.
Cool. Well, Paul, what are you reading this week? Or what are you excited for this week, I should say?
Well, yeah, speaking of Batman, my pick this week is going to be Batman number 48. Because it's a new issue of Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo's Batman. That's kind of the only reason I need to justify being excited about it at this point.
right.
This current story arc, I'm just loving so much. I love that Scott Snyder is taking a lot of the concepts from Grant Morrison's Batman run and kind of just making them, I don't want to say dumb them down, but make them more accessible in a way. Sort of make them more superhero-type stories.
Mainstreaming.
Sort of,
yeah. For someone who's not that familiar with what Grant Morrison did with his run, what kind of stuff is Scott Snyder pulling into this book?
Well, I mean, preventive spoiler alert, I guess, if you haven't read Grant Morrison's run. So if you haven't read comics, I mean, that are at this point probably like 5 or 6 years old, the fault's not mine if I'm spoiling it.
Yeah, spoilers,
But Grant Morrison, most of his run dealt with the idea of how to fix Batman, quote-unquote. You know, Bruce Wayne is a sort of tortured character, and I think Grant Morrison wanted to sort of fix him in a way or heal him from his torment. So the way he does it is by separating Batman from Bruce Wayne, you know, sort of making someone else become Batman, or not so much, he makes, you know, Dick Grayson become Batman, see if that works. And at the end of Grant Morrison's long run, he kind of realizes that Batman, Bruce Wayne, is a fundamentally broken character. He can never be satisfied. You know, he's always driven by this need to, you know, be Batman. And what Scott Snyder has done, and again, spoilers if you haven't read this current arc, but Bruce Wayne has very severe amnesia and forgot that he ever was Batman.
Oh, and, right.
You know, Jim Gordon has taken over the mantle of being Batman. Obviously, this is number 48. Issue 50 is very close. I have a feeling, because I've read comics my entire life, that issue 50 might be the one where Bruce Wayne becomes Batman again. Just a hunch, you know?
Because that's a comic book Scott- thing to do.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. Right. But Scott Snyder's been so good at this because it's like he takes this idea of let someone else be Batman and trying to heal Batman. Bruce Wayne is a total amnesiac. He doesn't even want to remember being Batman. Alfred tries to tell him about it. And he says, you know what? That's too painful. I can't deal with that. I'm happy right now. And they're laying the little stepping stones and hints that Bruce Wayne will eventually become Batman again. And I'm really enjoying this sort of just exploration of the character and the willingness of DC and Scott Snyder to just run with Jim Gordon as being Batman. I really didn't expect it to last this long. So kudos to them for letting the story build and sort of this slow pace. And something big happened at the end of issue 47, which I will not spoil, which makes me even more excited for this issue. The return of a classic character. So that's the most I'll say.
Gotcha. I do have one question. Now that Jim Gordon is Batman, does he do the same thing that Batman always did to him? Where they're having a conversation and then he turns around and Batman just fucked off. Like, does Gordon do that to whoever he talks to on the police force now?
Well, it's really interesting because Batman is now sanctioned by the Gotham Police, which is another interesting twist on the story. So the police are operating this new version of Batman, more or less. But there's been a few instances where he's gone to talk to Bruce Wayne and he's done something similar to Bruce Wayne. Not knowing, you know, obviously, the connection there. So
right.
Yeah. Man, just more fuel to the fire that says that I need to read this damn book.
Right? We're going to break you, Mike. One of these days, you're going to be reading Batman regularly.
One day, and we're going to start this show, and it's going to be me, you, and Nick. And I'm going to say, guess what, guys? I read Court of Owls. And there will be much rejoicing and all that.
Well, you know, the offer always stands. I will create a perfectly, you know, choreographed and organized Batman curriculum for you if you ever want to get really into the character.
Yes. One day I think I will reach out to you for that. That will be a big endeavor.
So, one day when Mike is at his weakest.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, well, what I'm excited for this week is Wolf number 5. My pull list is actually very small. I only have 3 issues coming out this week, and so I went into, you know, the Comixology's pull list just to make sure that I had subscribed to everything on there to make sure that I was getting everything. But yeah, everything's coming out next week. Like, I think I have 12 books coming out next week, whereas this week I only have 3, which is insane. Usually things are pretty even, you know, like 5 or 6 issues a week, and that's pretty regular, but for some reason January is just all over the place. That being said, I'm very, very excited for Wolf number 5. This is the Alice Cott, I can't think of his name, I just had it in front of me. Alice Cott's book about like this weird supernatural, Matt Taylor and Lee Lowridge is their names? That's the artist on the series. And it's this weird supernatural story about this guy named Wolf who lives in, or his last name is Wolf. They're in the story takes place in L.A. There's supernatural stuff. There's a tentacle. I'm playing Pokemon, I'm sorry. There's a tentacle-faced friend of Wolf's. There's this little girl named, or little girl, there's this teenage girl named Lucy who is supposedly the Antichrist. All sorts of crazy stuff. And they just wrapped up their most recent arc with number 4 back in October. So this series kicking up, or starting up a new story arc is very exciting just because there was a lot of mystery. There was some crazy stuff going on with vampires and it's a very interesting mystery story where we're slowly unraveling more and more pieces about who this our main character is, as well as building a bigger supernatural world in a modern day setting. So I'm really digging this book. It's less out there and wild and insane as other Cott books. So it's definitely something that is, I think, a little bit more accessible and very well put together. The art may not be for everybody, but I kind of like the grotesque style that they've gone with this book. It really matches the story. So if you have a chance, I think the first volume is coming out in February. So
I was gonna say, and this is an image book too, right? So it's gonna be
and it's an image book.
$10 trade.
Mm-hmm.
Not $50 like Secret Wars. Not that I'm bitter at all.
Yeah, yeah. Oh goodness. Yeah.
I read the first two issues of Wolf, and somehow I missed issue 3, but then I bought issue 4, so I'm stuck. You know, it's like I read the first two issues, and I really enjoyed them, but I'm like, I may have to track down issue 3 at some point to finish it. But yeah, it's funny. I keep buying Ellis Cott books. I have all the issues of Material, but I've never read them. I have all the volumes of Zero. I've only made it through the first one. It's one of those things that I think I need to devote a lot of time and attention to those books because they're so dense. That it's often time to kind of squeeze them into my schedule. You know, I have to make time to read them, which is kind of tough to do.
Yeah, and it's funny because Wolf really took me by surprise because it's a straightforward story compared to everything else. Like, Zero, for instance, is very dense and very all over the place. Like, that's a series you could reread 3 or 4 times and then finally get the entire story. Whereas, you know, and even Material, I know that that series actually ended at issue 4 and... Cott said that they might switch over to just doing OGNs, like original graphic novels, instead of doing ongoing serial stories, because if you read those 4 issues for Material, like, they are very strange to read with a month in between them, but if you read them all in a row, which I did, which I went back and did when the 4th issue came out and he announced that it was over, it works way better. So Wolf is very surprising. Is all it comes down to, just how straightforward and it's like not metaphorical. It's just like a supernatural story with a very good mystery on top of it.
Yeah, yeah. It definitely had to sort of Twin Peaks vibe for me. Yeah.
That seems like it would be really refreshing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I could definitely see that. But yeah, Secret Wars. Fucking Secret Wars, man. What is?
I'm gonna have to read that. I'm gonna have to read that at some point.
Secret Wars. Well, Brian mentioned it a second ago, but. You know, the whole $50 trade or hardcover for the 9-issue series. I mean, I get that those issues were a little bit longer, but they're not that much longer. Like, I thought the idea of a collection was that you're supposed to save money. I know that we bitch and complain about this so much, but seriously, Marvel, what the hell?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that there's going to be, like, extra material at the back of the book. There's going to be, like, process art and stuff like that, but... Yeah, like, once I missed a couple issues of Secret Wars, I was like, I'll just buy it and trade. That'll be cheaper.
Yeah.
And then I found out that the trade was going to be $50. You know, even their Amazon Prime, I'm only getting it for, like, $38.
Right. And, well, that's the hardcover. And if you want to wait for the soft cover, like, how much longer are you going to have to wait? Like, another 6 months just to read the book?
It's something like that, yeah. I didn't see anything about a soft cover when I was looking for it.
Yeah, I don't even think that's been solicited to Diamond or anything. So if you want to maybe save a couple bucks, you could wait a little bit longer. But how much fallout are we going to see of Secret Wars before then, if at all? Like, from the books that I've read from Marvel so far, there is no fallout from Secret Wars. They're just like, well, we're back to the universe as it was, and any minor differences in the universe are just kind of explained away, which works for me, but then it kind of calls into question, like, what was the point of Secret Wars? And I mean, without spoiling the end of it, and I don't want to, I could definitely see what the point was for other pieces of the Marvel Universe and for, like, bigger overarching future plans that they may have, but I don't know. That kind of bums me out, you know? Like, we're never going to have another Civil War. I'll say it a million times.
You know, so one of the books I did read this week that I mentioned earlier was Fade Out number 12. And I was very, as much as I enjoyed that issue, I was more excited about the idea of finally being able to read the whole story start to finish, which is kind of silly if you're buying single issues to think, like, I can't wait to reread it as a one chunk, but that's just how my brain as a comic book fan works, you know?
Yeah.
And it got me thinking about this idea of rereading comics, which is something I really enjoy doing. And I think... talking to other people on this podcast in the past, it's not a very common thing for a lot of comic book fans to do. You buy issues and you read them, or you buy trades and read them. But for me, part of buying a comic, in the back of my mind, I have this idea that I might want to reread it at some point. That's why I'm laying down $4 a pop for these single issues.
Right.
So to help justify that expense. And also, that's how I judge a comic sometimes. If there's a book that is good, but I'm not that excited about maybe rereading or revisiting, I'll just drop it and maybe pick it up at the library eventually when the trade comes out, something like that. So I kind of was wondering about that idea of reading comics, why we reread comics, or if you don't reread comics, why not? Do you see the value in that? So I guess maybe let's open up the question to you guys. Do you find yourself rereading comics or wanting to, or is it just doesn't even cross your mind?
Oh, I want to all the time. I say it on this podcast. Maybe I should go back and reread that whole series. Yeah. But
do you?
Do I actually do it? Rarely. Unless I have it in a digital form, I don't want to go and dig out the books sometimes. Right. Like, I don't want to go through my stack of comics that I haven't filed yet or go through all of my backlog. And if I do, that means that I'm doing it, I'm going to read it that day, and they're going to go right back in the box. So, sure. And in rare cases, when I actually do reread the floppies that I have, it's usually because I've got two or three issues of that series that need to go in the box. And it's like, hey, I'm already here. I was going to put these away. Why don't I just pull these out, reread them before I put all these books back? But I think the last time I did that was before I moved to New York. So, except for, material I did reread, but that was digital. So, I don't know.
Do you think that makes it easier to reread stuff if you just have it digitally? There's not that the onus of having to dig it out of your books or dig it out of the boxes and find it again and stuff?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Or if it's in a trade format. Like, if I've got a trade sitting on the shelf, it's so much easier to just pick that book up again and reread it. Like, I've reread Mouse Guard, Fall of 1152, or whatever, the first volume of that series. I think I've read that book probably four times, just because of how, like, it makes me feel inspired when I want to go play D&D, and I'm thinking of, like, what needs to, you know, happen? What do, you know, heroic characters do, or what are characters with swords, and I don't know. Or if I'm, like, crafting a D&D thing, like, that's a book that really inspires me because of the simplicity of the adventure of the characters. And so it's just a fantastic read altogether. I mean, and I have the next four volumes of that series, but I haven't read any of them because I keep rereading the first one. Like, I have Winter 1152, and I could easily grab it and read it, but I don't because I love the first volume so much. So, I don't know.
Interesting.
What about you, Brian?
Yeah, I think that going back and rereading comics, one of the big reasons that I do that is so that I can draw new connections with the issues that I'm currently reading. And the big one for me has been so far The Wicked and Divine, because I picked up the first trade and then started buying single issues from there, and we've gotten to a point in the story where each issue is building off the last issue. But if it's been a few weeks since you last read it, you might not remember every little nuance of that last issue. And so one of the valuable things about rereading is being able to go back and kind of refresh on what's been going on. And I think that's, I don't think that that's as necessary now as it used to be, just because now I'm on Reddit, I'm on Tumblr, I'm talking to friends. Like, this book is constantly in my peripheral vision, so I'm not losing the track as much as I might otherwise, just because of the massive social media presence that I've given it.
Yeah, especially on Tumblr, that book is a huge Tumblr book.
Yeah,
which is, especially when you follow like Kieran Gillen and Jamie McKelvey. Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, I get a lot of that on Twitter too, which is nice. Like, it's nice reminders for that book because there is a lot of story there. I found myself, specifically with Kieran Gillen's books, Uber was a book that I was reading week or month to month, and I, like, that was always one of the top five comics I would have in my stack, and I'm like, yeah, let's do this. And I found myself grabbing the past, like, two or three issues before that, especially if it was about that arc. It was really great about that book. It's on hiatus right now, but what was really great is that each of the individual arcs were loosely connected, but they were really standalone individual pieces of what was happening in World War II. So if I had, you know, the most, like, three issues prior of that arc, I would just go back, reread those three, and then read the most recent issue. And again, that's something I haven't done in a while because I I've moved and I'm lazy and I don't want to pull the books out of the box, but you know, for a little while there, I was going back and rereading those because it enriched the story so much. Like you said, Brian, to add, like, find more connections to the current issue that you're reading, to see the story progress in a quick go rather than month to month, which is nice. Which is, I mean, I think why a lot of people read trade paperbacks. You know, they'll wait for the collected edition just for that exact reason.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think that there's a weird, you know, there's a weird parallel between the way people read comics now and I think the way that they're written. I mean, I think they influence each other, but I think there's a lot of creators that have that in mind. So they talk about not issue to issue, but arcs and seasons. You know, you see that word thrown out a lot for the first season of the story. Season two, when the book comes back in a few months, it'll be different. They're almost like being designed to be read in total, not in chunks, which is difficult for me because I prefer to read things in single issues. And there's a lot of things that if you fall back an issue or two, or if you don't have it fresh in your mind, like you guys were saying, it can be tough to remember exactly what's going on in the story. So it's like rereading becomes necessary at some point in those examples.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like you're saying with Uber, there's the idea that in some books you don't have to reread the whole thing. You can just reread like from the start of the arc to where you are now. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I've ever actually seen that done correctly, because that's what I was promised when I started picking up Phonogram, The Immaterial Girl, the latest arc of that was coming out. And it was pitched to me like, you know, yeah, you don't need to have read any Phonogram leading up to this. You can just pick up Immaterial Girl and jump right in. I had no idea what was going on. And I wound up dropping it after like three issues.
I will say that having read the first two volumes of Phonogram, even in the first volume, and I'm really scared about how T is going to react to this next week when she's on, but even having read the first volume and the second volume, I haven't read The Immaterial Girl yet because I'm waiting for the collected edition because I have the other two in collected editions.
That's definitely volume, the smart way to go.
Volume one, though, of that book made very little sense to me. And volume two, having read volume one, made very little sense to me outside of my recognition of some of the characters from the previous arc.
So it could just be that this series doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
I don't think that it doesn't make a lot of sense. I think that it's a book geared at a very, very, very niche culture. And I am not in the whole like British pop underground indie hipster whatever scene you want to call it.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of the discussion in that book is just lost on me. And it made me really want to like find out, like, I want to get this book. I think that this book is very cool because I liked some of the magical components that they were doing. But even then, I was like looking up all these bands and all these different things and trying to draw the meaning that I think was trying to be instilled out of the series. And I just couldn't do it. But I really want to. Like, I want to be a part of that cool kids club.
Yeah, it does feel a little bit like going to hang out with your older brother and having no idea what he and his friends are talking about. But you want them to like you so badly.
Yeah, so you just smile and nod and laugh at the jokes at the wrong time, and they all look at you and they'll go, yeah, well, he's here. I guess there's nothing we could do about it, you know.
But that's, no, he's that's just kinda... one of Wicked Divine's friends. Don't talk to that weird kid.
Yes. But going back to the point here was, you know, even rereading sometimes, like, does that help you evaluate like the actual goodness of a book, or like, or if whether or not you like it completely? Like, if you go back and you're like, maybe I'm not, this book isn't for me, but maybe I need to go back and reread it, and then you reread it and you think, I actually am not a big fan of this book now that I think about it. Have you guys had that at all? I mean, Brian, it sounds like you have, but
I don't know if I've had that experience where it's negatively impacted my enjoyment of the book. Although I will say, you know, probably the book I've read and reread the most is Watchmen, just because I bought it when I was 16. So I've had, you know, 16, 17 years to go back and reread it. And each time I do, it's like, yeah, this isn't nearly as sort of revolutionary or mind-blowing as it was when I was 17, you know? Same thing kind of with Dark Knight Returns. As much as I enjoy that book, now when I reread it, I'm looking more at the craft rather than the story. I'm more interested in how the comic's made.
Okay.
And that's something that's interesting too, is like I find a lot of stuff that I'm rereading, I'm sort of taking more time to analyze the way the book functions as an art form, not to sound too, you know, hoity-toity, but just to appreciate the craft that goes into it. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's actually really funny that you say that, because as I was rereading The Dark Knight Returns, all I could think about was, Batman is such a badass in this book.
That's the point, right?
Like, and yeah, that was the whole point, but I didn't for a moment think about, I wasn't thinking too hard about the craft or the form or anything. It was,
oh, sure.
I mean, maybe because I've only read it, you know, the two times. You know, mm-hmm. I read it once when I was, I think, like 17 or 18, and I just reread it, you know, a couple weeks ago. And yeah. I think there were some feelings of nostalgia and me remembering, like, this is why I like this Batman story. Like, it's so cool. yeah. But even, you know, but then I look at, you know, The Dark Knight 3, and the more I think about it, I am thinking about the craft because I think, you know, 20, 30 years have passed and this book still feels the same. You know, what are the elements that they're pulling out of the older books to make this book feel like it's the exact same kind of story? Or at right. least that's how I felt so far. I mean, I've only read the first issue, and the second issue is the next on that's on the top of my stack, and of course, as far as my floppies go, that I need sure. to get to. But even then, just reading that first issue, it felt like the same, like the next day kind of thing. Like, despite the amount of time that had passed, it's mm-hmm. like when a good movie comes out and you feel like it's the next day in that story. It's that to me blows my mind, and it makes me want to look more into how were they capable of doing that. And I think when we talked about it, Paul, when the first issue came out, you and I kind of had like a rap session about it. We said yeah. that it was Klaus Janson's like inks that must have been doing a lot of the work, even though the art yeah. you know, the artist changed, the inker stayed the same, and that to me like rung true when I was rereading the older book, thinking like, wow, the styles are so close, and it's got to be that Paul was definitely right about that.
yeah I think that's an interesting example of a book that I'm gonna have to go back and reread, obviously, when all eight mm-hmm. issues come out. But like, that it is kind of remarkable the way that they've marketed the book as, like, hey, it's Frank Miller doing Batman again, but it's really, you know, having Andy Kubert on pencils, it's like he's mimicking the look and feel of the original really strongly. And obviously Klaus Janson's involvement helps that, but it does make me want to go back and reread all the other stuff again. You know, I just went back and reread Dark Knight Strikes Again, which I hadn't read since it came out. And mm-hmm. it's not a good comic, but I really enjoyed reading it because it wasn't good. You know what I mean? It's just so over the top and so different from the original. I was like, I was amazed that DC published it. And that's kind of something too. It's like going back and rereading stuff, like, why in the world did this even come out? Like, what were they thinking? That's maybe another example of why it's worth going back and revisiting stuff, because you can, you know, it sometimes doesn't make sense when at the time. But yeah. in retrospect, it kind of fits in a weird way.
Yeah, and that's kind of something that I think a lot of people do more often with movies.
Yeah.
And maybe even with books to an extent. I think they're, you know, maybe a lot of people have a book that they'll go back and reread, even though you know the story and you know everything. Prose is very interesting, where like you want to re-experience the feeling that you had when you were reading the book for the first time. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like a feeling of nostalgia. But when you do that with a movie, is it the same kind of thing as, or with a prose book or a movie, is it the same thing you get out of comics? Like, do you do the same, I should say, let me rephrase that. When you're rereading a comic book, are you doing it for the same reasons like when you rewatch a movie or reread a book? Mm-hmm. Do either of you get the same kind of feelings, or am I just like making this up in my head?
You know, it's funny, because when I was thinking about this topic, I was thinking of a couple different reasons why I reread books. And I think we've covered one, which is to sort of like, refresh your mind, refresh your memory, or like, you know, make connections that maybe you missed the first time you read something. Mm-hmm. I always go back and reread everything I have by Grant Morrison, just because I know the second or third reread, I'm going to get more and more out of it than I did the first time when I read it.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, a good example, but the other reason I reread comics is for that exact thing you just said, Mike, which is to experience the comic the same, or re-experience it the same way in some sense. I've reread Grant Morrison's Doom Patrol several times because it's my favorite comic book ever. And I reread it to get that Morrisonian, you know, feel that the book has. It's just so overwhelming and so clever and so filled with ideas that every time I reread it, I'm moved the same way I was the first time and like sort of captivated by the book. And like another example is The Love Bunglers by Jaime Hernandez, which is a story he did in the Love and Rockets series. And I've reread that mm-hmm. particular story probably half a dozen times. I remember the first time I read it, I was shaking by the time at the last panel, basically. There's something that happens in that book that, as a longtime Love and Rockets reader, like shook me to my core. And I was like,
oh, no
so
way.
Overwhelmed with emotion. I was like, had to get up and walk around. I was like, I can't deal with what just happened. And weirdly enough, every time I reread the book, I have a very similar experience. It's not, maybe not as intense, but looking at the craft and the way Jaime Hernandez uses comics to tell the story, I have the same reaction, even though I know what's coming. It's kind of fascinating. A book like that, where it's that weird mix where it's like, I know what's going to happen, but the story's so well told, it doesn't matter. It can't be spoiled because it's a perfectly told story.
Gotcha. What about you, Brian? Do you have any of that same kind of feeling when you're reading comics as you would like rereading a book or rewatching a movie?
Yeah, a bit. The big thing that always happens to me is after I've read something the first time, I have an idea of what I'm looking forward to. I know what cool things are going to happen, and I don't really remember like how it was written, so it's still like exciting to read again. Mm-hmm. But I'm definitely looking forward to those moments. Mm-hmm. And a good example of that is when I was rereading X Factor back last fall, and like I knew that Darwin was going to show up, and I like Darwin as a character, so I was super excited for when Darwin got there. And I actually remember like going through the issues leading up to that a lot more quickly than I did the first time.
Gotcha.
I mean I probably read 50 issues of that in like a weekend.
Oh man.
It was when I was traveling for work, and so I had like the plane ride out to South Dakota and then time stuck in the hotel with nothing to do. And it was all digital. I was reading it all on my tablet at the time. Mm-hmm. And so it was super easy to just like, I get to the end of the issue and it's like, hey, do you want to read the next issue? Yes, I do. So I'll just tap this button and start reading it.
No, that's awesome, dude. I mean, and X Factor is a fantastic book. I love that book to death. Peter David, I want you to write more X Factor, please. I know that you just recently wrote X Factor and it got canceled and it was the worst thing in the world, but you know what? Marvel's going to, they're going to see their ways. They're going to see the error in their ways, and you'll be back, I hope. I mean, this is my little love letter to Peter David. I know that you love writing Spider-Man 2099, but god damn it, I need you to write Jamie Madrix again.
Yes, please.
Yes, please. So one more thing, I think, before we end this episode, I had a question for you guys that I've been kind of thinking about in the back of my mind for the past, I don't know, couple of weeks, I don't know, mostly because I've been reading two specific comic books recently that are fairly new, Superman American Alien, which is a DC miniseries that is written by Max Landis with various artists, and I just started reading, and I praised it last week on the show, I just started reading X-Men The Worst X-Man Ever, which is written by Max Bemis and art by person whose name I'm awful at. I'm terrible. I'm sorry, artist. I really love what you do, but I can't keep track of everybody's name. But nonetheless, the point of this question and the point of this thought was, how do you guys feel about people who are typically associated with some other sort of creative medium coming in and doing comics? Not to say that they're not allowed and that nobody, you know, that they couldn't do comics, but how do you feel these types of creators, such as Max Landis, who's a writer for movies, and Max Bemis, who is a musician, typically, coming in and doing comic books? Do you feel like there is a difference in the way that they go about their writing, or do their styles feel any different, or do you have any experience with this at all? I mean, those are the only two I can think of off the top of my head, but if there are other people, I mean, I'm more than willing to hear ideas and thoughts.
Yeah, I read another series that Max Bemis was putting out a while back, and I can't remember anything about it except that he was the writer on it.
Was it Polarity?
It was Polarity. That sounds right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it's one of those things where, like, I definitely only picked it up because it was him. Like, if I had just, like, seen it on the shelf at the comic shop, I probably would have walked past it, but... Mm-hmm. I knew that he was putting it out, and I'm a fan of his music. I was like, oh, cool, let's see how he does with comic books. But as far as when I was reading the book itself, I definitely judged it as I would any other comic book. You know, I wasn't going through it and being like, oh, well, he's not a comics writer, so I'll cut him some slack if the writing's not that great. Yeah, I was like, yeah. No, if it had been bad, I wouldn't have read it. Like,
gotcha. The other person I could think of is Gerard Way. Who wrote Umbrella Academy and Killjoys, and he did that one issue of the Spider-Verse thing where there was the the robot spider person, SPDR or something. Anyway, sorry, Paul, you were saying.
Well, I think that people that write for film or television, obviously there's a little more, it's probably more similar to writing comics because they have to, it's more a collaborative process between the actors or the directors, all that. For making comics, I think a lot of people that are particularly write prose get stuck on that distinction between showing and telling. And sometimes they tend to overwrite. That's something I think I see a lot of writers are not, maybe aren't well versed in writing comics tend to do. They overwrite and they don't let the artist carry their equal part of the load. But I think that's not as big of a problem for, it's not as big a problem for people that are familiar with writing scripts for, you know, for television or movies. I will say that a lot of times it does sometimes feel like a marketing gimmick, especially if it's a big name. I remember when Kevin Smith started writing comics, when he was writing Daredevil and Green Arrow, you know. And I never read any of that stuff because it kind of had that taint to me of like, oh, look, here's a guy that nerds like. He's going to write these comics. But I did read a Batman miniseries that he wrote, and it was the absolute worst Batman comic I have ever read.
Was it the Y.B. Geyer?
I will not. No, it was the one before that, Cacophony.
Oh, because the Widening Geyer, I couldn't even finish. I couldn't stand it.
It was terrible. So I will not be reading any more Kevin Smith comics at this point. But, you know, I will say that I have bought comics that were written by CM Punk just because I'm a wrestling fan. It's like, oh, CM Punk's writing it. I can pick it up. And they're fine comics. Again, he's also someone that has written in the past and is a creative person. So and has read comics his whole life. So, you know,
I think it's
really sort of an obvious transition for him to do that.
Let's say, I think he did something in like the Thor annual or something.
He's also writing that Drax series that's out right now.
Is it really? I don't know that.
Yeah,
I think he's kind of co-writing that,
Yeah, he's co-writing it with somebody. I don't remember who, but I remember that was the big announcement at C2E2 that Marvel made last year. It was CM Punk's coming to Drax, and it was like, oh my gosh, Batista, remember? And so
right. Yeah, it's that weird connection. Yeah. I mean, good for him, though. I mean, I think that's cool when someone that is obviously a comic book fan their whole life reaches a point where they can kind of do that, you know? Whether they're, you know, your cup of tea or not. It's like, CM Punk's always loved comics. He's never been afraid to admit that. So now he gets a chance to write Marvel comics, you know, more power to him. That's right. Cool.
But the big concern is whether or not he's good at it, though. Because there's a lot of things that I really like that I'd be terrible at making.
Right.
If for some reason, like, I got super famous for, like, writing novels, I should not be allowed to direct the next Star Wars movie. Like, those are not the same thing.
Yeah. But, you know, it's actually funny because I think the reason why I asked that question was, you know, and Paul, you actually brought up a big point. Let me respond to that before I go into this next bit. But there are people who, you know, they've been writing or they wanted to write comic books or they've been a big fan. And I think that Max Bemis and Gerard Way actually are two people that wanted to write comic books, but they like became musicians instead. And then they had the opportunity to write comic books afterwards. And I think that's awesome, right?
Yeah.
But my second point here is Jonathan Ross.
Cool. Yeah.
Jonathan Ross, who is a British celebrity who hosts a talk show, I think. And I'm probably wrong, and I can't wait for Nick to tell me how wrong I am. But
Nick can't wait either. He's listening to this with a hard on right now.
I know, yeah. And so what's interesting is that when Jonathan Ross, though, wrote a comic book, he did this series called Turf through Image a couple years back with Tommy Lee Edwards on art. And the art for that book was absolutely astounding. It was a story that took place in the 20s. I highly recommend this to everybody. But it took place in the 20s. An alien spaceship lands on Earth, and it turns out that there are werewolves and vampires, and they're fighting against each other to try to own the humans in 1920s New York. And meanwhile, there's like this whole unionization of the Broadway musical people who do all that stuff. And everybody, like, there are three or four factions, and then all of a sudden there's an alien faction that shows up. And the book was really, really cool. But the problem was that I think Jonathan Ross, I think the comics that he had been reading and he really enjoyed were like old 60s and 70s comics written by Stan Lee, where 95% of what's happening in the story is being told to you in caption. So when you read Turf, it feels like an old style book where there are big splash pages that just have captions all over the place, or they're, you know, 9 panel pages and 3/4 of the page is captioned because he just explaining the events as they happen rather than trying to actually let them play out, as you were saying before, Paul, letting the artist do the heavy work.
Right.
Now, that's not to say that Tommy Lee Edwards didn't do a lot of work in that book, because he absolutely did. There were some of the most beautiful two-page spreads in that book that I've ever seen in a comic. And to this day, anything that Tommy Lee Edwards is on, I am more than willing to try. For instance, he did an issue of American Alien just recently with Max Landis.
Oh.
And it was beautiful. It was absolutely gorgeous. So read that book, because that book is kicking a lot of butt. No matter what you might think about Max Landis, that book is actually really awesome. But that being said, it's interesting to see how people from other mediums who are, you know, better or really good at their current medium come over to comics and how they bring their own influences. But that was just something I'd been thinking about, just as I realized that I'm reading more and more books like that, where people who aren't known for comics are coming over and doing comics. And it's not a bad thing. I'm not trying to say that there should be some exclusivity where if you don't do comics, you can't come in to make comics, because that's a bunch of bullshit. But, you know, to see people who are good at one thing come over and try to do comics, which is a thing that we obviously all love and know pretty well, is an interesting thing. So, any other final thoughts about that, guys?
I think it's good to give them a shot. But like I was saying earlier, I think that the quality of the comic has to kind of win out in the end. Like, if Max Bemis is writing this worst X-Men ever book,
and it's amazing,
and it was, yeah, like, I'm sure it's great. Because I believe you. But let's just go into a hypothetical world where it's a garbage comic book. Like, let's just pretend that it sucks. If it went on for 50-some issues, like, that would be outrageous. Because it would only be happening because it's this other famous guy writing it. Like, I don't know. I think that a bad book is a bad book regardless of who's writing it and how good they are at other things.
Yeah. Stephen King.
Yeah.
Stephen King. I will just say I read American Vampire and it really wasn't for me, despite Scott Snyder's name on that book.
Same. I had the same reaction myself.
Mike. Yeah.
So. I didn't read it. I borrowed it from Renee and I forgot to read it.
But that was really interesting too, because like that first arc had the Stephen King backups in it, and the writing styles between Scott Snyder and Stephen King were very different.
Yeah.
And the way that they used the medium was very different. It was very obvious one studied comic books and one was schooled and studied, you know, prose writing. And the difference is very obvious when you write them back to back like that.
Yeah. I mean, in Stephen King's defense, he says this in the foreword of Volume 1. He's like, this is the first comic book I've ever written, and they had to heavily, heavily edit this book because I didn't know how to show, not tell.
Right.
Like, he specifically says that. So there's a little bit there's a little bit of leeway that I give there, because he was like straightforward and just in the foreword for the book saying, this might not be my best work, but I really like what Scott and I were able to do. So not everyone gets that chance, though. That's the thing.
Right.
Yeah.
So don't come over to comic books is what we're saying. No, just kidding. Please write comic books. We want good comic books, and we want everyone to try to write good comic books. So please do that.
But I don't care if you're the freaking Pope. If your comic book sucks, I'm not going to read it.
I would love to read a book written by the Pope.
Yeah, actually, can we get him on the phone?
I have his number, but I think it's a little bit late there. So I'll try calling him tomorrow morning when it's midday. How about that?
Okay, that works.
Gotcha. I'll let you know, Brian.
Thanks for listening to the I Read Comic Books podcast, a Destroy the Cyborg production. This episode was produced by Mike Rappin and edited by Xander Riggs. This week's music was brought to you by Capital Cities, Prolator, and Infinity Shred. To those of you listening on iTunes or Stitcher, we'd love it if you would take a quick moment to rate us. Your comments and ratings help others find the show, and let us know how we're doing. If you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, you can email the show at cyborg@destroythecyb.org. If email's not your speed, feel free to shoot us a message on Twitter at @destroythecyb or through the hashtag #IReadComicBooks. You can also find us on Tumblr at @destroythecyborg and on our subreddit at ireadcomicbooks.reddit.com. And again, thank you for listening.
Yeah, so I was gonna say, Paul, I went to One Punch Man Volume 4 came out, and apparently Midtown Comics doesn't sell, like, I don't know, they don't sell Viz comics, or they don't sell all of the popular manga in the world. Like, they sell Attack on Titan, mm-hmm. they sell Bleach, you know, like, kind of staples as far as, like, American translated manga goes. But they didn't have One Punch Man, or at least I didn't see it, or maybe they were sold out. So I googled, manga store Queens, in, mm-hmm. and there's a couple of things that came up, and a couple of them were already comic book shops. But then there was this one place called Anime Castle, and it was all the way out in Flushing, like, at the end of the 7 line. I don't know if you ever went out to, like, the New World Mall or anything.
No.
But, yeah, it was, like, all the way at the end past the Met Stadium.
Wow.
And so I went out there to find some manga, and in my head I was like, Anime Castle, that's what this name of this place was. I was like, that sounds kind of prestigious, or at least sounds like, you know, like a standard regular size shop or whatever. So I go all the way out there, Kelly and I go all the way out there, and walking down the street, and everything is like, so when you get out to a certain part of Queens, it becomes like a second Chinatown.
Okay.
And Koreatown and Japantown, or whatever you want to call it. But it basically is just like all different, like all of different parts of Asia are just like just dropped in this part of Queens. So everything's in Chinese, Korean, Japanese. And so I was like, okay, if this place is one of those places that's in, like, it's in another language, I'm not going to be able to find it. Right. 'Cause some of the businesses just don't have, you know, they just don't have English on their title, because they, you know, they're not for English speakers. And I was like, okay, whatever. But so I'm walking down the street, and I see this place at Anime Castle. I see the sign, and it's like one of those, it's a basement store. Mm. So it's like you had to walk down to like a flight and a half of stairs to get to this place, which is underground. Mm-hmm. And I walk in, and it's really, really cool, because they had like all of the walls in this place were just lined with manga and like DVDs and like little like figurines and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I went in there and found One Punch Man, and they're like, oh, we're doing a sale. So I looked around for like 20 minutes trying to find anything that, you know, if I wanted to buy anything else. And I was like, I don't know shit about manga. So I was like, okay, I could buy Dragon Ball Z and look like a fucking asshole, or I could just buy this One Punch Man and go about my business. So I grab One Punch Man, and I go to check out, and the guy behind the counter, he goes, yada, yada, yada. He goes, you know, do you want to sign up for a thing, you know, with our store? So if you come back, we have all your information. I was like, sure. So I signed up, and he's like, oh, you came all the way from Woodside, which is where I live. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, how'd you find us? And so I was talking to the guy for a little bit. So he turned out to be the owner of the store, and actually, he's like, oh, and I told him I just moved to New York, and he, because, like, we were sat there and talked for, like, 10 minutes. It was bizarre. Like, the dude was super, super nice. Otherwise, I would have been like, get the fuck away from me, you weirdo nerd.
Right.
And so he was telling me that, like, he actually went to school at U of M and had been to Grand Rapids and all this different stuff. Like, he went to Yuma. He goes to YumaCon every year, so they, like, fly out to Michigan. And it was super bizarre. And I got my manga and walked away. It was, I don't know, it was a really interesting store. I was going somewhere with a story, and I totally lost it about halfway through. So, but that's what I did. I don't know. To find this one volume of manga, I went all the way out to the ends of Queens, or at least the 7 line, mm-hmm. to do that.
Wow.
Which is interesting.
Yeah.
And hence, as I said right before we started recording, like, there's a big wrap around the manga because they don't want you to read it in the store, and I promise it's not porn. It is just One Punch Man, which is published by Shonen Jump and is for children, okay? So. Right.